Om Shri Sai Ram. Greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam to all the viewers and listeners of this satsang from around the globe. We are coming to you live on the eve of possibly the oldest festival that has been celebrated at Prashanthi Nilayam and in the Patha Mandiram before Prashanthi Nilayam even came up. It is also a festival that spans the longest number of days. It has a great history and many wonderful and awe-inspiring stories associated with it. Yes, we are speaking of the festival of Dasara. The festival of Dasara had its origins in the early 1940s, 1946 to be precise, and from then on it evolved into multifarious colors, hues and celebrations till it approached a celebration of karma, bhakti and jnana. In the last few years of the physical sojourn of Bhagwan, the festival of Dasara was marked by a karma yagna, wherein students and staff of the Satya Sai educational institutions would go to the nearby villages to do grama seva. It was also marked by a bhakti yagna, the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yagna, which was held in the Prashanthi Nilayam precincts at the Purnachandra Auditorium, and it was also marked by a Jnana Yagna, wherein erudite and scholarly speakers would address the gatherings in Bhagwan's presence in the Sai Kulwant Hall. Of course, the most scholarly speeches would be Bhagwan's discourses, his pearls of wisdom that he would shower on us. Today, it's our honor and privilege and pleasure to go through the history and the origin of this magnificent Dasara celebration in general and the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yagna in particular. So, with that, we will be getting into this satsang and Brother Prem will be joining me. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind and Sai Ram to all our listeners. Indeed, this is one of the very important festivals in the Indian calendar, the Bharatiya tradition. Speaking about festivals, Swami would often say this, you know, in the Indian tradition, festivals are celebrated most often for one of two reasons. Either it's the birth of a divine personage or it's a vanquishing of an evil force. And Swami would often remind us that all these festivals are significant because they indicate to you something that happens within rather than something that happens outside. And in that sense, the Navratri festival is very important for every sadhaka. Because it's not merely worshipping of a few deities, as we will see. It is an internal journey. It is a process which every spiritual aspirant, which Swami expects each one of us to be, has to go through if one wants to achieve the spiritual goal that one has set out for oneself. Talking about the festival of Navratri, it spans over 9 nights and 10 days, to be more precise. But technically, there are 4 such Navratris in a year, observed in the Bharatiya tradition, of which 2 are very auspicious compared to the others. One is the Sharad Navratri and the other is the Vasant Navratri. And as the names themselves suggest, one comes in the autumn equinox. That's the one we're going to be celebrating in a couple of days from now. The other comes during the spring equinox. That comes sometime in the months of March, April. And of these, the Sharad Navratri, we are approaching, is considered very, very auspicious also because we celebrate it as Devi Navratri. And Swami would often say that we worship God in the forms of Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati during this festival. But talking of the inner significance, because Swami would often insist that no celebration is complete without dwelling into the inner significance of these festivals. As I was saying, that these are not merely deities that we worship. We go to a temple and we have a ritualistic form of adoring them. But we need to recognize what they are within us. Dear listeners, whatever we are saying is not our wisdom. This is all what Swami has spoken. And we've just tried to get together some of these things to give you a very small glimpse of what Swami says on this topic. Because this is not the topic per se. We're going to speak of something more dear to us. I would put it that way. So Swami says that all these 3 forms of Shaktis represent apara prakriti. Apara prakriti means that divine aspect of nature that is manifest. And there is an unmanifest nature that is the divine being. So when you say these deities represent apara prakriti, it means that they are manifest within us. And Swami says, you know, you want to transform, you want to take to a spiritual path. What is the first step in that? The first step is you have to make a resolve. You have to say, I want to transform, or I want to become a spiritual person. That is the sankalpa or the will that we often refer to, and that is represented by the Ichcha Shakti, the resolve in the form of power, and the deity that pertains to Ichcha Shakti is Mother Durga. Swami would often say in Swami's Jnanavayani, Swami says that the entire spiritual journey starts with Subhechcha, the desire to progress for oneself. And without that, you can't do anything. Right? Mm. And that honestly calls for a little bit of audacity. Imagine you and me getting up one day and saying that I am divine and I want to realize that. That calls for bravery, valor, and that's why they say the spiritual journey is the greatest adventure. And that's why Mother Durga also represents valor and courage. Only a resolve is not good enough, because we take resolutions every new year. What needs to be done after taking the resolve is work towards it. And that is where the aspect of Kriya Shakti comes into play. And this power of action or activity is represented by Mother Lakshmi. Because after having taken the resolve, you need to use all your resources in that direction. And that is why those resources involve everything. Our body is a resource, our money is a resource, our relationships and our roles and the responsibilities in life, all of these become the resources that we have to put into this. And that's why Mahalakshmi also represents wealth, Dhana Shakti, Dhairya Shakti, and the energy of health. All of that is represented by Mother Lakshmi. You've taken a resolve, you have the resources, but you should know how to use it. Right? Mm-hmm. Swami says you have all the ingredients, you're hungry, but you should know the way to cook the food. And that wisdom is represented by Jnana Shakti in the form of Mother Saraswati within. Right? And Swami categorically says, not one of these on their own is capable of vanquishing Mahishasura. The 10th day, Vijayadashmi, is celebrated as the day in which these three devis come together and vanquish Mahishasura. And Swami would say that Mahishasura represents the tamas within, because he's a demon in the shape of a buffalo. And if you have driven on the Indian roads, you know how obstinate buffaloes can be. No honking and no yelling can get them off the road. That is how these, the dark qualities within us are. So these three devis, which means the resolve, the resources, and the wisdom has to come together, discrimination has to come together, and that is when the vanquishing happens. And that is the significance of Navratri and Vijayadashmi. And another very important significance which Swami speaks of, very relevant to us today in these times, Swami would give the example of the approach of Ravana. Right? Swami would say Ravana represents a man who has this idea that he wants to enjoy nature without adoring her and without adoring the master of nature. Right? That's how he goes and abducts Mother Sita, who is supposed to represent Prakriti. Vijayadashami is also the day on which Lord Rama defeats Ravana in the battle. So in that sense also, Swami says, Navratri is a celebration where we adore Mother Nature, understanding this fact that it is not wrong to enjoy nature and her blessings and her bounty, but it has to be done in a more reverential manner and with eyes not taken off, without taking one's eyes off the goal, the Lord behind the nature. That's why this is a festival which is so much more internal than ritualistic and external worship. And understandably, this was one of the festivals that was celebrated very, very early in Swami's avatar exurgent, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, when you were saying that each of the devis by themselves are not effective, it's only when all the three come together that some effect happens, transformation happens. I was just reminded of how Swami would always say that you start with purity, then you need unity, then only you achieve divinity. Unity is so absolutely essential. And it just struck me how lucky we are that Durga, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Sai Jagan Mata, as the bhajan goes, you know. We have a Jagan Mata who is a combination of all the three. And this was recognized as early as 1946. because that was the first time that Dasara was celebrated in the Pata Mandiram. Those days, the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir and Ashram were not there.
Right.
So, it was Pata Mandiram.
It was a Kotta Mandiram. 1945, it was inaugurated.
Right? Absolutely. We call it Pata Mandiram now because relatively it's old.
It's old.
But it was a new Mandir for Bhagwan, which was inaugurated in December 1945 on the Vaikuntha Ekadashi day. And the next year, it was an initiative, as you said, it all begins with the Ichha. It had desire that was expressed by the devotees. The devotees wanted to celebrate this festival that belongs to the mother in the presence of their divine mother. If we just think of 1946, Swami was barely 20 years old and he had already become the divine mother for so many devotees. So, even 1 week before the actual Dasara day, you know, in 1946, as per the calendar, the Dasara spanned from September 26th to October 5th.
Right.
So, these 10 days were Dasara. Even 1 week before that, lorries, that is trucks, began to come from Bangalore, bringing in tents, military tents and shamianas. The whole area of land around the Pata Mandir was leveled so that people could sit, and these tents were erected. A lot of lighting was also put up, because those days there was hardly any lighting. There was no street lighting also. In fact, during one of the Dasara celebrations many years later, I think the lighting also got inaugurated. But in 1946, since there was no lighting, they had to even fetch a generator. So, some devotees from Trichy, Tiruchirappalli, they had got in a generator. Basically, a lot of preparations had been made by the devotees with their desire that we need to celebrate Dasara in the presence of our Divine Mother. But you know, 1946, there were so many problems. For instance, though the generator was there was no fuel to power this generator. So, they were in a fix. Now, what do we do? How do we light up? We have the generator, but there is no fuel. But there is Swami. Ichha Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, all in one. He asked for a drum of water to be brought and he told them to fill this generator. And you know, it has become a kind of a familiar thing for us to say, lo and behold, with that water, the generator started running, lights came on. Swami also on his own made a lot of efforts and if I can say preparations for the devotees for Dasara. In fact, he called Sheshagiri Rao, who was the first ever priest for Bhagwan. Before that, Bhagwan himself used to do the aarti to his photographs. Sheshagiri Rao was the first person. His story is phenomenal. We will not go into that now. But he took over as the priest in the Pata Mandiram. So, Swami asked him to get one large vessel. And when that vessel was brought, Swami just placed his palms together and began to rub them. And as he rubbed them, vibhuti began to flow profusely, filled up the vessel in no time. And Swami said, let this vessel with vibhuti be placed in the Pata Mandiram to be given as prasadam for all the devotees throughout the Dasara celebrations. Most beautiful feature of this Dasara, just now Prem spoke about Durga, Lakshmi, Saraswati. Now, each of these goddesses have different forms and each of these forms are worshipped on each of the days of the Navratri. So, Durga three forms, Lakshmi three forms, Saraswati three forms, meaning nine forms of the goddess. And each form of this goddess is supposed to have one color associated with it. So, during Dasara, what the devotees would do is, they would get special robes stitched for Swami, matching the color which is pertaining to that particular goddess on that day. And in the evening, in that robe, Swami would be taken in a procession. And even for that procession, special palanquins were made. Florist devotees from Bangalore especially, and even from Madras and other nearby towns and cities would come bringing flowers. They would decorate this palanquin, take Swami around. We have lots of photographs of Swami sitting on the palanquin, going around. Unfortunately, those days we didn't have color photography. It's all black and white photography. So, we cannot make out the different color robes that Swami is wearing. But this aspect, I think, has inspired one particular section in the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum today. If we visit the museum, we'll see this section where Swami is dressed as each one of these devis. There are beautiful life-sized idols of Bhagwan as each of these devis that are worshipped during Navratri, and we can have darshan of Swami as these devis in the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum. And I'll just go through these nine Navratri goddesses. starting from day 1 to day 9, whom all are worshipped. So we have Shailaputri, Brahmacharini Devi, Chandraghanta, Kushmanda, Skandamata, Katyayini, Kalaratri, this is supposed to be Mahakali, Mahagauri, and Siddhacharini. And finally, on the 10th day, as you said, it's the day of victory. So, the Devi is worshipped as Rajarajeshwari. So, this was how the whole Dasara celebrations used to happen right back then in the Pathamandiram days. It was unforgettable for the devotees. I'm sure you remember, Prem, how these processions by themselves had so many miracles and beautiful leelas associated with them.
Absolutely. In fact, when we speak to devotees of those yesteryears, one of their fondest memories is the celebration of Dasara and the palanquin procession. Oftentimes, when you refer to Swami as Jagannatha, you would do your, you know, when you speak about the different colored robes that you that they got Swami, stitched for Swami, the palanquin that they made, this was celebration of the mother, right? It is not merely adoration. This is like children coming together and celebrating the mother. And some of the incidents are phenomenal. And one of the devotees recollects that they decked up the palanquin so much, and Swami came dressed in beautiful silk, wearing garlands, and depending on the palanquin, they would give a staff in Swami's hand. Sometimes it would be a trishul, sometimes it would be a flute. So they would make Swami sit on this palanquin, and they did not have the heart to take their eyes off Swami. So how do you do a palanquin procession if you're not looking ahead, right? Usually you carry the palanquin and you walk ahead. So then Swami said, okay, you look at me and walk backwards, right? So that's how the procession happened. They were, most of them were looking at Swami and they're walking backwards, and Swami was giving direction from the palanquin. Hey, there's a stone there, don't go that way. The lane is narrow here, go this way.
So they don't trip and fall.
And a procession like this would start sometime around 9, 9:30 in the night, right? Because this was the last event of the day. By the time they would come back to the mandir again, it would be 2, 2:33 in the early hours of the morning. Right? So it's, you can imagine, 4, 5 hours of going around the entire village. This happened for a couple of days, and then one of the devotees got a bit curious. He said, where are we going? Right?
Exactly, so, for 5 hours. Right?
And we are not repeating. It's not like we are going around in circles. So they decided that they will go in the morning and they'll see the village. How big is the village, and you know, where are the roads leading? So they go around the village. In 15 minutes, they're done with going around the every lane in the village. So they said, okay, let's do it a little slowly. And they go a little slowly, and maximum 25-30 minutes, you've gone through the entire village. And they said, we don't know where we went in that procession. We don't know where Swami took us. You know, what was the leela that Swami played through this entire thing. So this was just one of the many miracles that would happen. There are some devotees who narrated that Swami would be decked in garlands. Swami would pluck flowers from those garlands and throw to the people in the procession. And those would turn into dollars and chocolates, and sometimes, and many of those devotees have treasured those as mementos till their lifetime, right? And apart from the palanquin procession, which was one of the grandest events, there used to be a Sumangali Puja, right, where Swami used to be worshipped as these mothers using Kumkum Archana. Again, Swami would not lose an opportunity to remind them what Kumkum Archana is. Swami would say, this is your offering your blood, which means you're offering all your actions to God, and saying that I will ensure that they are pure and noble. So many of these beautiful processions marked events marked the Dasara of the 40s and even 50s. But dear listeners, what we would like to speak to you today is another aspect of the Dasara celebrations, which started in the early 60s, which is very significant because it also marked a very important event in Swami's avataric life. Much before the 60s, Swami would often say that my avatar has a few there are some missions that I have to complete in this avatar. And two of those very important things that Swami would say is, I am here for Veda Poshana and Vidvat Poshana. Right? The fostering of the wisdom of the Vedas and for the protection of those who take repose in the Vedas, the pandits who take to the study of the Vedas. So this aspect of Swami's avataric life was going to get expression in the Dashara celebrations that began in the 1960s. But for that, we need to introduce a very interesting personality. And I'll leave that to Arvind.
Absolutely. Thank you, Prem. This personality that you speak about is Swami Amritananda. But before I just go into Amritananda's story, one more little detail that just flashed my mind of the Dasara celebrations of yore is on the 10th day is supposed to be the day of victory when Lord Sri Rama won over Ravana. So they would also dress up Swami as Rama, give him the bow in his hand, dress up one of the trees as Ravana with 10 heads, and Swami would actually shoot a flaming arrow or a normal arrow to this tree to celebrate and mark that victory of Rama over Ravana. With that little detour, coming back to this very significant personality, it's not about Swami Amritananda as such, but the role that he played in the mission. Just like Hanuman in the Ramayana, it's not about Hanuman, but the role that he played as Rama's messenger. So that is the reason we are going into the life of Swami Amritananda. And Swami Amritananda, especially during one interview, something happened in an interview on the 1st of October 1955. And that is of so much importance and so much magnificence. But to appreciate that magnificence, once again we need to go into the life of Swami Amritananda. So Swami Amritananda was born, I think, somewhere in 1870. In 1955, during the time of this interview that I referred to, he would have been an 85-year-old man. He has taken sannyasa. He was given sannyasa by Swami Narasimha Bharati of the Sharada Sringeri Peetam. Sringeri Sharada Peetam, I mean. A simple Google search about Swami Narasimha Bharati shows what a big, immense figure, revered personality, spiritually inclined, spiritual figurehead that he is. So, in fact, he is the one who got the Kumbhabhishekam done for the Kaladi temple of Shankaracharya and Aryama, that is Shankaracharya's mother.
Okay.
The Kumbhabhishekam is when you set up a temple, the topmost point of the shikhara of the temple, the Gopuram of the temple, over it there is a Kumbha that is placed. Right. You do Abhisheka to that, and that is symbolic of the energy being retained, infused into the Garbhagudi. And this Kumbhabhishekam is done usually once in 12 years again and again to recharge. So, he is of that eminence, and during that Kumbhabhishekam, he initiated Swami Amritananda into sannyasa. This is 1910, which is 16 years before even Bhagwan made his advent. After that, Swami Amritananda has travelled all around India in spiritual pursuit. He has been to Jagannath Puri in the eastern side, to Dwaraka in the west, to Rishikesh, Badrinath, Kedarnath in the north. He has spent a lot of time with Ramana Maharshi at his ashram in Tiruvannamalai. In fact, Swami Amritananda finds his name even in what we call the Ramana Gita as Yatindra, Swami Yatindra. His name appears there also. He has held many discussions with Ramana Maharshi. Advaita, Yoga, these were all his passion. And you can imagine at 85-year-old, he's traveling alone on his own across the length and breadth of the country. That was the physical fitness that he had, which is representative of his spiritual yearning and purity of life that he has led. Now, he happened to be an acquaintance of Professor Kasturi. In 1955, that year was the first time that he happened to see a photograph of Bhagwan. And where he saw the photograph of Swami, there was one little girl who came and told him that, this is God, you must see him. And seeing the passion and energy of that little girl, Swami Amritananda was moved. The 85-year-old Swamiji was moved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just felt that this also shows how, you know, conviction and enthusiasm of the youth is so very important. Seeing that girl's energy and enthusiasm, he told Professor Kasturi that, I am actually going to the Sharada Peetam to celebrate Navaratri there, but I think I will take a detour, come to Puttaparthi for a couple of days. Can you arrange for that? I would like to come to Prashanthinilayam for a couple of days before I proceed to Sringeri. And Professor Kasturi was now thinking, oh my God, this is an 85-year-old person, I have to make some arrangements. So he made personal arrangements in his own home. Swami had gifted Professor Kasturi by then a home in what today is the East Prashanti. So there were about 6 homes. One of them had been allotted to Professor Kasturi. And Professor Kasturi thought he would host Swami Amritananda. To cut a long story short, he who came to stay for 2 days ended up staying for 75 days in Prashanti Nilayam. Because you know, every morning when he first saw Swami itself, he was bowled over. He felt this is no ordinary being. After that, the schedule. He would religiously attend the bhajan sessions, the morning Nagar Sankirtan. He would go early in the morning to Chitravati to take a bath. And he would say the bathing ghats of Chitravati are as pure and wonderful as the bathing ghats up north in Rishikesh. So he was so thrilled with this. And he received multiple interviews from Bhagwan. One life-changing interview is the very popular and famous incident that we hear about, wherein Swami reminded him of a Ganapati Homam that he did as a 7-year-old, 1877. And Swami Amritananda was, you know, amazed, because this is a memory which was very faint for him also. And Swami said, you did this Homam for 41 days and the result of that is supposed to be the darshan of Ganesha. Don't think that any spiritual effort goes in vain. I will grant you that darshan. And Swami granted him the darshan of golden Ganesha, after which, you know, Swami Amritananda was simply bowled over. In fact, one very sweet incident, Professor Kasturi one day was sitting at his home and there was a window to his home and Swami Amritananda came to Professor Kasturi and asked, what is the cost of this window? And Professor Kasturi said, see, that wood is not even teak, some wood, so I think it's about 2-3 rupees. Said, no, it's invaluable. Even if you're offered the Maharaja's palace at Mysore in exchange, don't give up this home because you have the darshan of Krishna and Shiva through this. Incidentally, through that window, one could have the darshan of Bhagwan at his residence whenever he would cross by for breakfast, lunch or dinner. Or anytime Swami came out, you could have darshan. And Swami Amritananda called it the Kanakana Kindi. Referring to, you know, Kanakana Kindi, briefly going into that, Kanakadasa was a great shepherd poet in Karnataka and he had great yearning for Krishna. But being of a lower caste, he was not allowed to enter the temple at Udupi. Udupi Krishna temple is very, very famous. So he went behind the temple and cried out in yearning, singing songs to Krishna. And it is said that the wall behind broke, it collapsed, creating a kindi or an opening. And the idol of Lord Krishna turned around, giving darshan to Kanakadasa. So, even to this day in Udupi, you will have to have the darshan of the idol from behind, because the idol is reversed. So, that Kanakana Kindi is what this is Amritananda had told Kasturi. And true to his word, you know, Swami Amritananda didn't leave Puttaparthi till he extracted a promise from Swami that when I am breathing my last, Swami, you will be there to give me darshan. Only after extracting this promise from Swami, he left. You know, and Swami Amritananda during his life met many people. He met Mahatma Gandhi, he met Madan Mohan Malviya, he met Bal Gangadhar Tilak, everywhere. You know, he has met the who's who of our Indian history. So, such a personality, he had one huge burden and worry, which Swami utilized. I will say it that way, because it's not as if the avatar's timeline is not set. The avatar's actions are timeless. It's all set even before the advent. But Swami Amritananda was an instrument for this magnificent event that we are talking about, which is the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna. And how it happened, I think, Prem, you should share it. It's so beautiful.
Right. As Arvind was saying, you know, Swami gave a lot of interviews in that period when he was in Prashanti Nilayam. More than the interviews, he was very fascinated with bhajan singing, he used to attend all the bhajans. And slowly Swami started calling him for interviews, and after every interview he would come back and he would speak with such awe about what Swami had said. He would come and tell Professor Kasturi, I've never heard anybody explain Advaita like this. I've never heard anybody speak of yoga like this. And Swami had even pointed out at some mistakes that he had done in some yogic practices because of which he had sustained asthmatic effects and all of that. So every interview was a revelation in that sense. One particular interview, as Arvind mentioned, 1st of October, he comes out of that interview and he seemed like a person of whose back a huge burden was lifted, absolutely relieved. He comes to Professor Kasturi and says, "And I've completed my life's mission." It was almost like that. So Professor Kasturi asks him, "What happened? What did Swami say?" And he says, in the interview, Swami all of a sudden tells him that, "I know that you have collected a huge sum of money, and Ramana Maharshi has told you that this should be used for the uplifting of Vedas. And so you have met all of these great leaders of India, Madan Mohan Malviya, Bal Gangadhar Tilak and Mahatma Gandhi, and you've been trying to establish a Veda Pathashala in the north." Swami tells him, "I have taken avatar for this very purpose. So this burden is no more yours, it is mine. I give you my word, I have taken over it." So this was very momentous. It was a declaration that Swami made on the 1st of October, 9:30 to be precise, and that's an important time. We will come back to that. So it is after this word that Swami gave him, Swami Amritananda comes and says that all my life's mission is fulfilled. And needless to say, within a span of a few months, he takes samadhi after he leaves Swami's presence, after also extracting that promise that Swami will give him darshan in the last few moments. So this event was very momentous and was a seed that led to a larger tree that we are referring to. There's another important event which again happened in an interview. Just like Swami Amritananda, who was a great scholar, who was a great proponent of Vedantic wisdom, another scholar, but this time not from India, but from the West, his name was Valestin, and he came from France, Sorbonne. He was a French scholar, also a Sanskrit scholar, who had come to India, and he wanted to translate some of the Vedas into French, so that the people of the West could also benefit from that. So in his journeys in India, he comes to Prashantinilayam, and in the interview that Swami gives him, he prostrates to Swami and he puts his plea in front of Swami, saying, "Swami, the Vedantic wisdom, the study of the Vedas, and this scholarship of Vedas is all on the decline in India, and this is a very, very saddening plight. Swami should do something about this, because this is a treasure, and if India doesn't preserve it, the world is going to lose something so precious." And Swami tells him that, again, the same words, you know, this is why I am here. I have come for this very purpose. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You can return to wherever you're from, and wherever you are going to see this revival of the Vedas happening. This is not to say that Swami was referring to our live streaming later, but today it really is a reality that the revival that Swami has started every day when Vedam is being chanted in the Mandir in Prashantinilayam, you can listen to it from any part of the world. And that's truly an expression of what Swami said, that wherever you are in the world, you're going to see that this revival has happened. So Professor Kasturi in Satyam Shyam Sundaram notes these two incidents in the chapter where he speaks about this event, which is the Dashara event, right? But even this, as Arvind was saying, Swami could have said that this is what I'm going to do. But Swami has this very mysterious and playful way of putting the thought in somebody else's mind and then fostering it. Swami did that with the hospitals, with the institutions. Swami would often say these were all desires of Mother Ishwarama. So similarly, even this, again, you know, I was just talking to Brother Ganesh. They are the Vedam chant people who chant Vedam in the Mandir. He also does the program called Veda Jignasa, and they're going through the Medha Suktam, incidentally, in their program. And one of the things they were discussing was this, that God is present in each one of us as that Medhas, as that intellectual power. And most often you would see that Swami would inspire the thought in devotees' minds, and then Swami would foster that thought. Similarly, even this idea of doing a yajnam during Dashara. So we've come to the point finally. During the Dashara festival, to have a grand yajnam celebrated was put in the minds of devotees far off in a place called Amalapuram.
East Godavari district.
East Godavari district, Konasima as it is referred to. But instead of we narrating it, we had the opportunity of speaking to late Dr. Goteti Saraswatamma, one of the old devotees of Swami who's been coming to Swami from the early 1960s, one of the people who had the blessed opportunity to be in the entourage during Swami's Badri visit.
Mm.
We should listen to this narration from her. This is not something even they expected, how the events turn out. We'll listen to it in the words of Dr. Sarvasatamma. The interview is in Telugu, but we have English subtitles. So do listen to it, and then we'll continue the narration from there.
Just one little point here is I felt even in all of this, we see the expression of Dasara, because it all begins with the Ichcha. That Ichcha has to come from the devotees. So though it's part of the master plan, Swami doesn't say this is the master plan, this is what is going to happen. He, as you said, inspires that noble desire in the hearts of those who are worthy, and then later on, that is divine humility, expresses gratitude to them, telling it was their desire and they did it. So with that mindset, let's hear Sarasatama Garu.
Inga 62 శివరాత్రి వెళ్ళాను. శివరాత్రి వెళ్ళి వచ్చిన తర్వాత ఇది మాత్రం జాగ్రత్తగా వినండి. 62 ఏం చేస్తామంటే, శివరాత్రి వెళ్ళి వచ్చిన తర్వాత మాకు ఈ లోకల్ గా ఉన్నటువంటి 4-5 భక్తులు కూర్చుంది, ఇలా కాదు మనం సప్తాహం పెడదామన్నారు. సప్తాహం అంటే ఏమిటి, ఏం చేస్తారు, ఎలా చేస్తారు, నామం చేస్తారా, భజన చేస్తారా, పల్లెటూరు సప్తాహాలు అంటే చరిత్రలతో భజనలు చేస్తారా, 7 రోజులు అలాగే చేస్తారనుకున్నాను, నాకు తెలియదు. సరే సప్తాహం అయితే చేద్దాం, సప్తాహాన్ని స్వామిని పిలుద్దాం. స్వామి జేబులో మనిషి అనుకుని మరి స్వామి రావటం ఏమిటి, సప్తాహాన్ని కానీ అటెండ్ ఏమిటి, ఆయనకి ఏం కావాలి, ఏమి ఇంకా అదేం లేదు ఆలోచన, స్వామిని పిలవాలి అంతే. సరే అని చెప్పి సప్తాహం ఉత్తరం రాసి పంపేట ఉత్తరం రాసి ఆ భద్రం గారి చేతికి ఇచ్చి స్వామి పంపించాను, స్వామి ఇక్కడ సప్తాహం చేయాలనుకుంటున్నా, మీరు రావాలి, ఎలా చేయాలి, ఏం చేస్తాం రాస్తే స్వామి మిమ్మల్ని వెంటనే పంపించారు. నీకు అమలాపురంలో సప్తాహం చేస్తే అమలాపురం వాళ్ళే చూస్తారు, కనుక ఆ సప్తాహం మీరు పుట్టపడతలో చేయండి అన్నారు. ఏం చేయటం, ఎలా చేయటం, సరే బజ్జారు తీనే తిరుగుతుంటాం, నాకు స్వామికి మధ్య నేను తిరుగుతుంటాను, స్వామికి నా కబుర్ అన్ని మోయటం, మళ్ళీ అక్కడి నుంచి పట్టుకొస్తుంటాం, ఏమేం చేయాలి అన్నట్టు అనేసరికి అన్నారు, అమ్మా సప్తాహం యాగం చేస్తా ఉన్నారు స్వామి, యాగం చేద్దామట అన్నారు. యాగం ఏం చేస్తారు, నాకు అసలు ఏమీ తెలియదు, ఏం చేద్దామండి. సరే కామాధాని గారు అప్పుడే కొత్త మన దగ్గర రావటం, కామాధాని గారు కలుసుకున్నారు, ఏవో అన్నీ చేశారు. చేసిన తర్వాత ఖర్చు పండించ అంతా ఉంది నా దగ్గర. స్వామి సరే సప్తాహం పుట్టపడతారు చెప్పన్నారు కదా, చేస్తాం, దానికి ఏమైనా పేరు పెడదాం, సాయిరాం సప్తాహం, సత్యసాయి సప్తాహం ఏమైనా పెడదాం అని అడిగితే స్వామి అలా కాదు, దానికి ఏమి చెప్పారు, వేద పురుష సప్తాహ జ్ఞాన యజ్ఞము అని రాసి పంపించి, వేద పురుష సప్తాహ వేద పురుషుడు ఎవరు, సప్తాహం ఏంటి, జ్ఞానం ఏంటి, నాకంతా గ్రీక్ అండ్ లాటిన్, నాకేం తెలియదు, ఇదేంటండి ఇంత పెద్ద పేరు, నోరు తిరగదు, ఇదేం సప్తాహం అన్నాను నేను. ఏమన్నా మా స్వామి అలా చెప్పారు, ఇంకా అప్పటి నుంచి సప్తాహానికి ఏమేమి కావాలి, ఆ ఋత్వికులు ఎవరిని పిలవాలి, మా కోనసీమ అసలు చెప్పుకోకూడదని గొప్ప కర్మ భూమి, త్యాగ భూమి, వేద భూమి, దీనికి ఈ గోదావరి పాయలు మధ్యలో ఉన్నట్టే కోనసీమ అంతా వేద భూమి, ఇక్కడి నుంచే పండితులందరూ సెలెక్ట్ చేసి తీసుకెళ్ళారు. ఇంకా స్వామి అన్నారు, ఒట్టి కోనసీమ కాదు, మొత్తం కొత్తగా పెడుతున్నాం కనుక అందరికీ ఆదుతగా ఉంటుంది, ఏం చేస్తాం చూద్దామని కనుక అందరినీ పిలుద్దాం. సో కృష్ణా జిల్లా నుంచి ఆ కుప్ప భైరవ శాస్త్రి గారు, తర్వాత చాలామంది అలా అందరు వేద పురుషులు వేద పండితులు పిలిచారు. పిలిచి ఇక్కడి నుంచి అన్ని సప్లస్ ఏంటి, ఆ శృక్షులు వాళ్ళు నెయ్యి అవి వేస్తారు, హోమాలు అవేసి ఇవి, దర్భాసనాలు దర్భాసనాలు అక్కడ కోటి పిల్లలు అలుగుతారు, బ్రాహ్మణులు కింద కూర్చోకూడదు కదా, దర్భాసనాలు అవన్నీ మేము తీసుకొస్తాం సార్, తెచ్చుకోండి, అక్కడ దొరికిన కురిడీలు తీసుకొస్తాం, కురిడీలు కూడా పట్టా మేము ఈజీగా చిక్కి తెచ్చుకో అన్నారు. సరే ఆ సప్తాహ జ్ఞాన యజ్ఞానికి చాలా జరిగాయనుకోండి, ఆ స్వామి ఇలా చెయ్యి అలా చెయ్యి అని ఎప్పుడు ఇన్స్ట్రక్షన్స్ ఇచ్చేవారు, వాళ్ళ పిలు వీళ్ళ పిలు, బ్రహ్మ ఎవరు భద్రం అన్ని బుర్రకథలా చేస్తున్నాడు, అతనికి ఏమో అనుభవం లేదు, ఎన్నో రాసేవారు ఆ పట్టెళ్ళి. అవేం చేసాం, ఈవేళ గోదావరి దాటాలి, నేను అవన్నీ పుచ్చుకుని ఇంకా నా యజ్ఞం ప్రారంభం ఇంకా టైం ఉందనగా ఇంకా 10 రోజులు ముందు వెళ్ళేదాన్ని, దీనికి ముందు అన్నీ రెడీ చేసుకున్నాం, ఓ నావలో పెట్టుకుని నావ గోదావరి దాటి అక్కడ స్పేట్ గోదావరి స్పేట్ రాజమండ్రి దాటాను లేదు, ఇక్కడ వేరే ఓటమిండ్రి దాటాలి. దాటాలని అన్నీ పెట్టుకుని నేను రెడీ చేసేసరికి పోలీసులు వచ్చి వెళ్ళడానికి వీలేదన్నారు. గోదావరి హై ఫ్లడ్స్ ఉందమ్మా, ఇది మేము ఎలా చేయమని, ఫండ్స్ రావటం లేదు, ఏమీ రావటం లేదు, మీరు వెళ్ళిపోవలసింది అన్నారు. ఇంకేం చేయో, సరే అని మళ్ళీ ఆ సామాన్ అంతా మోసుకుని దగ్గరే ఇంకో పల్లెటూరు ఉంది, ఆయన వెళ్ళి వినాయకుడు ఉండేది, అక్కడ రాజుగారి ఇంట్లో అవన్నీ పెట్టారు. నా క్లయింట్లో వాళ్ళందరూ అవన్నీ ఇక్కడే ఉంచండి అన్నాను. నెక్స్ట్ డే మార్నింగ్ ఏం చేశానంటే, అక్కడ దగ్గరగా పాలపూర్ అంకాని ఇంకో ఊరు ఉంది, ఆ ఊరు ఎవరినైనా పంపించి అక్కడ సలాద్ సత్యనారాయణ గారు నాకు నా క్లయింట్లు ఆయన కవర్ చేసి మీ ఇంటికి వస్తున్నాను నేను రేపు పొద్దున్నే, మీరు రెడీగా ఉండండి అన్నాను. సరే గోదావరిలోనే ప్రయాణం, ఇంకా రోడ్ లేదు అని మర్నాడు పొద్దున్నే బయలుదేరి ఆ భద్రం గారిని తీసుకుంటున్నాను, మా చెల్లెని తీసుకుంటున్నాను, నా గుర్తు చెప్పలేను. ఇవన్నీ మళ్ళీ నావ చేసుకున్నాను, నావలో ఇవన్నీ పెట్టుకున్నాం, పెట్టుకుని నేను డాక్టర్ కనుక స్టెతోస్కోప్ శతో కిట్ అన్ని పుచ్చుకుని నేను పాలిపడానికి పేషెంట్ ఉంది, పేషెంట్ చూడడానికి వెళ్ళాను. సరే వదిలేశారు. ఆ గోదావరి ఒడ్డంటే పాలిపడానికి వెళ్ళాం, వెళ్ళి ఆయనతో మాట్లాడి అక్కడ కాఫీ తాగి అక్కడ నుంచి గోదావరికి అక్కడ ఎవరు లేరు, అడ్డంగా గోదావరి దాటాం అవతల ఒడ్డు, అవతల ఒడ్డు నుంచి మళ్ళీ ఆ ఒడ్డంటే కోటిపల్లి వచ్చాం. వచ్చి సామాను నేను అక్కడ బస్ ఎక్కి అక్కడి నుంచి రాజమండ్రి వెళ్ళి రాజమండ్రిలో బుక్ చేసి సామాను బయలుదేరి బయలుదేరి నెక్స్ట్ ధర్మవరం వెళ్ళాం. ధర్మవరంలో దిగేసరికి సామాన్ రాలేదు. ఇదేంటండి అంటే ఆయన అన్నారమ్మా వేరే ట్రైన్లో వస్తుంది, అది రేపు పంచారాయణ కనరాదు అన్నారు. సరే ఆ రోజంతా ధర్మవరం స్టేషన్లో ఉండి మనల్ని సామాన్ తీసుకుని సామాన్ అంతా అప్పుడు రెండింటి పళ్ళే ఆ పళ్ళు మేము ఉంటేనే వాళ్ళు ఎట్లా తోలుకొచ్చేవాడు, ఎక్కడ మేస్తూ ఉండేవి అవి, మనం వెళ్తున్నాం అంటే అప్పుడు ఆ ఎడ్లు వచ్చి అమ్మ బండి రెడీ అయింది, ఆ గంట సేపు అక్కడ కూర్చునేవాళ్ళం బొక్కపట్టాను అలా తీసుకెళ్ళాం. ఆ సప్తాహ జ్ఞాన యజ్ఞం ఇప్పటికి 33 సంవత్సరాలు 34 సంవత్సరాలు ఆరిజిన్ అమలాపురం ఇక్కడది కోనసీమ.
సో దాట్ ఈస్ హౌ అ సప్తాహం దట్ వాజ్ సపోజ్ టు బి కండక్టెడ్ ఇన్ అమలాపురం ఇన్ ఈస్ట్ గోదావరి డిస్ట్రిక్ట్ బికేమ్ ద వేద పురుష సప్తాహ జ్ఞాన యజ్ఞ అట్ ప్రశాంతి నిలయం. As always, there are many, many amazing, mysterious stories connected with the Yagnam. But one story, again, which is popularly said, but it is so beautiful, it is connected to the kingdom of Chincholi. Now, Chincholi is a kingdom that comes in the Gulbarga district of Karnataka. It was in the border between Andhra Pradesh and, erstwhile Andhra Pradesh and Karnataka, now Telangana and Karnataka. So, the Raja Sahib of Chincholi, that is Bhimsen Rao and his wife, Rani Lakshmibai, these were the royal couple at Chincholi, they were devotees of Shirdi Sai Baba. But this Rani had two sisters, Rajamma and Sitamma. Now Rajamma had a son whose name was Krishna Swami. So all of them are devotees of Shirdi Baba. Now one foremost devotee of Shirdi Baba was one Abdul Baba. He used to dress like Shirdi Baba only, great devotee of Baba and always thinking of Baba. Many times the other devotees of Baba thought him to be like a representation of Shirdi Baba himself, because he used to even dress like that. So once when this Krishna Swami, that is the son of Rajamma, had gone to Abdul Baba, he told that your family will be blessed with the darshan of Shirdi Baba, which was very strange for them because this was 1946. How will we have Shirdi Baba's darshan? Shirdi Baba has taken Mahasamadhi in 1918. But then in 1947, Rajamma and Sitamma, both these sisters, happened to come to Puttaparthi because of their friend Sakku, who was the sister of Nagamani Purnaya. Miss Nagamani Purnaya is a very well-known devotee and a popular author as well. She has written this book called Divine Leelas of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. So because of that, they happened to come to Puttaparthi. This is how the royal family of Chincholi got introduced to Swami. And they came during Dasara, coincidentally. Having witnessed all the things that happened during Dasara, they were bowled over, they accepted Swami as their Lord, and in an interview that they got, they expressed their gratitude to Swami, and Swami said, get the Rani and come also next time. And so that is how the Rani of Chincholi and the Raja also later became devotees of Bhagwan. In fact, in 1949, the Rani invited Swami to stay at her residence in Hyderabad. It was called Shriniketan. And Swami went and stayed there. Now, during his stay there, Swami told the Rani that, hey, I need my robe and my kamandalu and my hookah, they are with you. So the Rani was surprised, what is Swami referring to? What robe, what hookah, what kamandalu? Swami also said that the robe was stitched with a needle that was used for stitching jute and other big sacks and such things. So with a big needle it had been stitched. And then the Rani thought, oh, maybe Swami is referring to Shirdi Baba visiting Chincholi. Because Shirdi Baba had visited Chincholi a couple of times. In fact, there was a special tanga, that tanga is like a horse carriage that the emperor, the king had made to take Shirdi Baba around the kingdom of Chincholi. And that tanga today, again, has been housed at the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum, the tanga which was used by Shirdi Baba. Now, people may often wonder that there is no record of Shirdi Baba having travelled to Chincholi, having left Maharashtra any time. But, you know, even in the Satcharitra, we see references that Shirdi Baba makes to Seema Langan, meaning the crossing of the border. Apart from that, any Shirdi Baba devotee will say, this is absolutely possible for Baba. Without having left Shirdi, Baba can be in America, can be in Europe. What is there to be in the kingdom of Chincholi? So, the royal family definitely remembers hosting Shirdi Baba. That itself is a miracle. This Rani connected one and one and thought, oh, maybe Swami is referring to Shirdi Baba. But for all that she thought, she could not remember anything like a kamandalu that what Swami is referring to. As if to add to that, Swami also said, see, when you are renovating the palace, you cut down that favorite Margosa tree of mine. You shouldn't have done that. And you know, she was like, oh my God, yes, this was indeed done. And so it became even more strong for her that definitely Swami and Shirdi Baba are the same and this is what Swami is referring to. So when she was back at Chincholi, this is after Swami left Shriniketan, came back to Puttaparthi, when they went back to Chincholi, she went to the storerooms and conducted a thorough search and finally she actually found a kamandalu. By the way, for those who are unaware of what a kamandalu is, it is this. It is this kind of pot which sages of yore would use. They would always carry along with them with a japamala and a Y-shaped stick and this kamandalu which would hold their water. This brass kamandalu was found and the Rani of Chincholi, Lakshmibai, got it cleaned and she got it placed in the palace. The next day, she saw that there was a cobra that had coiled around this kamandalu. And she felt that it was something mystical and something divine. And she felt that it is better I take this to Swami and ask him what is to be done with it. So she brought it to Puttaparthi. When she gave it to Swami, Swami seemed delighted as if he found something that he had long lost. He said, finally I have got my kamandalu. And he immediately turned the kamandalu and pointed out to Rani of Chincholi something that nobody had seen so far. On the side were engraved the letters Sa and Ba in the Devanagari script. Swami said, this is Sai Baba, this is mine. Nobody else knew it, only Swami knew it. So the Rani and said, Swami, please keep it. And that's how this kamandalu was with Swami ever since the early 50s. But again, as I said, it was so mysteriously connected to the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yagna. Because there came an occasion when once, I think Prem, you should take over this narration over here.
Right. As you heard from Sarasvatama Garu, they had come up with this idea of the Yajnam and then Swami converted it into the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajnam. And she also mentions this name, one Bairagi Shastri, Kupa Bairagi Shastri.
Mm.
He was an old devotee of Swami and also a Vedic Pandit. So he was given the task of, you know, making an exhaustive list of what are the things that are required for a Yajnam like this. Swami told him, you know, be very careful. Ensure that you list down everything, don't leave out anything because you will not get anything here. Swami said that, but during the Yajna many times Swami materialized a lot of small idols and small items that they needed. But Swami said that, you know, you should ensure that everything comes and so a lot of things were got from Amlapuram as that devotee was narrating. It so happened that just the day before the Yajnam, we're going to be going back and forth a little with the chronology. So the day before the Yajnam, Kupa Bairagi Shastri goes to Swami and says, Swami, Pedda Tappa Indi Swami, Swami, a big mistake has occurred. I have forgotten one very, very critical, thing in this list of things that we need for the Yajnam. So Swami said, I told you we should not forget anything. What is it that you've forgotten? So he said, Swami, we need a kamandalu of, it should look like this. It's very, very important. for the first puja itself we need. Without that, we will not be able to do the yajnam.
Of these proportions.
Right, of these particular proportions. These are the Vedic inscriptions that are mandate kamandalu like this. Swami said, I told you to be very careful. Now, where will we go for a kamandalu? And he said, Swami, what to do? Please, give us a way out. And Swami said, wait. And Swami goes inside and brings this kamandalu, which the Rani of Chincholi came and gave, which had the inscriptions of Swami's initials, where it said Saba, as he was saying. So Swami said, here, take this. So this is the connection, this is in 1962, but we don't know exactly when that kamandalu must have come.
After 1949, so 50
right,
or 51.
After 49, sometime in between that decade it must have come. But this is how it was done, but going back to the yajnam itself, this Bairagi Shastri, this great devotee, was one of the people who gathered the pandits. They came to Swami and they said, Swami, we would like to bring all these pandits. And one of the beautiful statements that Swami made during that occasion is, Swami said, why only pandits from Konasima, right, that region of East Godavari, from where lot of Vedic pandits are there? It's supposed to be a land where Veda is fostered even till this day. Swami said, my Sima is not Konasima, my Sima is Veda Sima. It is limitless. He said, it does not have any boundary at all. So Swami insisted that I want pandits from various places. And that's why from the north, from Benares, from South India, lot of these pandits were gathered. So Kuppu Bairagi Shastri, he says, a very interesting event. There was a lot of trepidation among these pandits. They said, who is this? After all, a Raju, right? A reference to Swami's lineage and caste. He is doing a yajnam. You don't expect us to come and fall at his feet. We are all pandits.
Brahmins.
Right? So Bairagi Shastri told them, you don't have to fall at his feet. He is performing the yajnam. You come and do your duty. So he convinces them. They come. So Swami makes elaborate preparation where they will be housed, what they will be given. So they all, I think, if I'm not wrong, they were housed initially in the general hospital, because that was the only building that had that kind of space. So they all were lodged there. Almost as soon as they landed, Swami comes there, right, to meet all of them. And Swami comes with a huge vessel of milk. Swami says, you all have come, you all must be very tired, come have milk. That single act brought such transformation. So as Swami was going around giving milk, they all started chanting Vedam.
Wow.
Right? Almost like inviting Swami into their presence, they started chanting Vedam. And one after the other, each one came and prostrated in front of Swami. Right? In one small motherly act, Swami transformed all of them. But not only that, right? These are all great pandits. The way Swami conducted that entire yajnam, Swami won the heart of all those people. Because so scrupulously, even the size of the kushagras mats, the pillars where it was placed, the size of the Omokundam, they say, everything to the last detail as given in the scriptures was followed. Even today, even these years, if you see the Dashara Yajnam, the way the fire is kindled, they use those arani wood. It is not some matchsticks or lighters which are used. That is used, and everything. And one of the very senior people who was officiating in that particular yajnam, his name is, let me get that name right, Uppaluri Ganapati Shastri. Right? Swami gave him made him the presiding pandit for the entire yajnam. He, apart from the morning yajnam, there used to be talks in the evening where all of these Vedic scholars would speak. So in some of these talks, he would say that what appears like very casual acts that Swami was doing, they also had very specific scriptural roots. He would narrate that. Today you would have seen that Swami came and gave these dhotis of this particular color to this group, this particular color to that group. That is given in the scriptures.
And you would say, not by chance.
It's not by chance. Right? And the order in which Swami gave, that is also given in the scriptures. Swami would come and refer to them with specific names. Right? Not their given names, but specific names. Those were the roles they were supposed to play in the yajnam. So he said everything. He said, 50 years I've been in this field. I've been doing yajnas and yagas. I have never come across any yajnam being done so perfectly. So not only Swami won them over through their love, but this was their profession. This was their passion. So it is the greatest joy for them that somebody was following all of these to the last bit and Swami was doing. So everything, you know, the cow's milk which was gathered, sand from anthills which had to be procured, everything Swami did, the way the spoons were made with specific wood. And the other people who were all present, I think we should just mention some of their names. Because most of these people came initially very skeptic about, you know, who is this Sai Baba, what is he doing? There was one, they all had long titles, Vidwat Kavi, Vemparala, Surya Narayana Shastri. Right? He was another person who came as a skeptic person. In fact, he knew Kamavadani Garu. Kamavadani Garu, another great Vedic scholar who came and settled in Prashantanilayam. He knew him from the Rajamundry days. So even though this great scholar was telling him about Swami, he said, you know, what is all this? How can you say he is avatara and all that? So he comes, and during this period that he was there, in fact, he says that now I have deep-rooted conviction that he is my Krishna who has come in this form. And there was another great scholar, Sri Venkata Subha Shastri from Warangal. Dear listeners, we have cut down a few of his titles with due respect, because I don't think we will be able to pronounce all of them.
Just shows what great Vedic scholars
were. Right, they were all great, and each one from different schools of Vedanta. There was one from Mimamsa, there was one from Nyaya philosophy, because they had to have representation from all of them. And these people would give talks about those fields of Vedantic knowledge. So he said, he was another person who came as a doubter. So he said, you know, in these past few days I've been in Swami's presence, I have been observing him and I've been putting him to test through the Shastras. Because the Shastras say, the scriptures say, how you can recognize the divine personage. He said that I've been putting Swami through the scrutiny of all these Vedantic inscriptions. And I can say with conviction, he says in one of those evening talks, he says, I can conclude that Baba is Bhagavat Avatara Murti. I have absolutely no doubt about this. And these are all these great scholars who came as skeptics, who did the Yajnam in this phenomenal way, and in their understanding, they kind of declared to the people who were there, this is what we understand Swami is.
You know, Prem, you were saying about how right on day zero, just with that motherly act, Swami won them over.
Right, actually, I think we forgot that.
On day one, in fact, on day one.
9:30 was a very significant time.
Time, yes, what, as you said, because October 1st, 1955, at 9:30 a.m., Swami had given that promise to Swami Amritananda. 7 years later, exactly on the 1st of October 1962, Swami instructed all these pundits and priests that let the Yajnam begin at 9:30 a.m. And they said, no Swami, these are all very holy things, very sacred. We have to begin at Brahma Muhurtam early in the morning. Swami said, okay, ni ishtam. Swami never enforces. He never forces. He says everything should come from source. But just like as it's happening in Puttaparthi now, back then also it began to pour so heavily that these pandits who had gone to the Chitravati got stranded there under one rock. Finally, when the Yajnam proceedings began, it was on the dot 9:30. Swami even makes a reference to that in his discourse.
Right.
Swami says it started at 9:30. See, these, who are we to change? It has been set by the Divine Lord. Exactly 7 years. At the same time when he gave a promise to Swami Amritananda, this fructified. You know, Prem, you were speaking about these scholars getting bowled over. Possibly in conclusion, we can speak of the conclusion of this Yajna, because there are so many stories, dear listeners, related to the Yajna, and maybe in a future satsang we will take it up. But the conclusion, the grand conclusion, you know, all these great champions of the Vedas and Shastras and all these branches were so bowled over by Swami that they felt, Swami, we want to conduct the Tribhuvana Vijayam. Now, what is the Tribhuvana Vijayam? Tribhuvana means the three worlds and Vijayam means victory. It celebrates one who has won victory over the three worlds. Often in some of our movies, scriptural movies, we see how all the sages go to Mahavishnu in Vaikuntha and pray to him saying that we are being harmed and troubled by this Rakshasa, right, demon. Please come and save us, protect us. And it is said that Vishnu takes avatar for that.
Hmm.
You know, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam. So the Tribhuvana Vijayam is a ceremony wherein the Vedas and all the other sciences and branches that support the Vedas, you know, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa, the six systems of philosophy, philology, phonetics, theology, grammar, all of them are supposed to come and pray to Vishnu and say, please sustain and nurture us. And all these pandits, you know, among the pandits, they were experts of each of these fields. Whether you take Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Vedanta, Veda, Upanishadic thought, they were experts. And they were representing each of these. So they decided that we will do this ceremony wherein we will come and pray to our Mahavishnu, which is Swami, that please you must protect us. Meaning protect the Vedas, protect the Shastras. When this was suggested, some other scholars said, Baba is who? By now they have all realized, they are bowled over. They said, how can you tell Baba to come and act like one, you know, playing in a drama like he is receiving the prayers? At that time, Swami gave a beautiful response. Swami said, the very fact that I have taken on this human body, I have been acting. I shall do this role as well. So they were very thrilled, but their thrill went to another level when, you know, what amazing thing has happened. Imagine, on the day before this ceremony, Tribhuvana Vijayam, what comes to Puttaparthi? A large wooden bed of the Adishesha. Just imagine, I am getting goosebumps even as I say this. Adishesha bed for Bhagwan. And they are like, oh my God, how did this happen? 10 days before, as Swami has inaugurated the Yagnam, Swami has gone in the dream of a devotee in Mumbai, in Bombay, then it was called Bombay, and given her darshan as Lord Vishnu on the Adishesha. And she is so inspired, she immediately gets a wooden bed made as the Adishesha, with all the hoods, the tail, everything perfectly painted, and by road gets it transported to reach just the night before for the Tribhuvana Vijayam. And you know, you refer to Puluru Ganapati Shastri, he on that day describes, he says, what a scene is this. At the conclusion of the Veda Purusha Sapta Jnana Yagna, to pray to Lord Mahavishnu, he says, I am speaking now, but the 4 heads of Brahma, the 6 heads of Subramanya, or even the 1,000 tongues of Adishesha will not be sufficient to describe this glory. It is indeed a privilege that we have got to witness this. You know, these were the feelings of conviction and fulfillment and joy and thrill and spiritual bliss that were expressed by great scholars and pandits who had come as critics and cynics to begin with.
Talking about the first Dashara, the apt conclusion would probably be what Swami said in some of his discourses during those Dashara. At one point, Swami said in his discourse, he said, do not be misled that I am the person who is performing the sacrifices. I am the person receiving the sacrificial offering and awarding the rewards. What a grand statement to make in front of all this gathering of devotees and Vedic scholars. In fact, the day before the Mahapurnavati, Swami said, tomorrow you are going to have the darshan of the Yajna Purusha himself. And that video which we saw was that event that we all got to see. And Swami standing there and the Purnavati being performed. Can't tell in words how fortunate we all are, because the greatest blessing that Swami has given is the instilling of faith that when we offer, he receives. That when we submit, that he accepts. And this entire yajna that Swami performed continues to perform and is going to give us the blessed opportunity to be a part of even this year is a proof of this. That when you offer, he receives. And when he receives, our lives get sanctified. With that, dear viewers, we most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. And we thank you all for your very, very patient listening. Jai Sai Ram.